Hey listeners, it's Tim. Can I just grab a quick minute before the show starts? As you've probably heard, Top Music Live, our dynamic two-day in-person conference for music teachers, is being held in Sydney during the Term 2 Australian school holidays over the 15th and 16th of April 2026. Our presenters have now been announced: Dr. Anita Collins, yours truly, Elisa Milne, Samantha Coates, Rebecca Stewart, Mark Matthews, Paul Myatt, Amber Hammond. The list goes on. It is an incredible lineup, and I just cannot wait to share this experience with you. This innovative event is unlike any other conference you've attended, unless you came to Piano Pivot Live in 2020, of course. We'll have amazing keynotes, interactive workshops, live on-stage teaching demonstrations, and opportunities to connect with fellow educators, all in a welcoming, relaxed atmosphere with full catering. See the complete two-day schedule and book your ticket now at topmusiclive.com.
It's one of my favorite things to talk about. I used to be kind of scared of composition because I never did a composition major at university or anything. But over time, I've realized it's not about, you know, needing to write concertos. It's more about breaking it down into bite-sized steps or aspects. And that's worked really, really well. And I do love it now. So, yeah, lots of fun.
Welcome to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the place where teachers from around the world meet to share innovative ideas about music education. Listen and learn as we help you motivate your students, grow your income, expand your studio, and become a more creative piano teacher.
G'day everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast and another great chat with an inspirational music teacher from around the world. And in fact, this guest today is from my very own hometown of Melbourne, Australia. This is episode 96 of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. And if you're one of my Inner Circle members, then a special welcome to you. My name is Tim Topham, and I'm the host of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. And this is the place where you can get a dose of weekly inspiration, new ideas and teaching strategies to help you in your piano teaching studio. Today's show notes and a full transcript are available now at timtopham.com/episode96. Now, a quick couple of reminders before we start. When this episode goes live, the APPC, the Australian Piano Pedagogy Convention in Adelaide, will have just finished. So hopefully I will have met lots of you there this week at the conference. Thank you very much if you came up and said hi, and I look forward to continuing our relationship both through the blog and the podcast. Next week, I'm heading over to the USA for 3 weeks of workshops and conferences. The 88 Creative Keys workshops in Denver, Colorado are actually now completely sold out, but you can still catch me the week after that from July 26 to 29 at the National Conference on Keyboard Pedagogy in Chicago. To find out more, head to keyboardpedagogy.org. Hopefully there'll be some tickets available for you. I'll be giving a live workshop in the Keyboard Lab all about chords, harmony, rhythms. It's going to be great fun, and I look forward to seeing you there. And also, if you'd like to meet up and hang out with me and other creative piano teachers, then head to timtopham.com/meetup, M-E-E-T-U-P, for the details of where we'll be grabbing a drink or some food while we're over there in Chicago. All right, so let's jump into today's podcast. It's all about creative ways of using music technology in your studio, particularly when it comes to rhythm work and composing. And my guest today is a music technology trainer, consultant, blogger, and podcaster who is passionate about helping music teachers through her business, which is called Midnight Music. She runs hands-on workshops, presents regularly at conferences, and she offers online training and support to music teachers all over the world through her music technology professional development community. She's also recently started a new podcast called the Music Tech Teacher Podcast. And if you check out that, you'll be able to hear my beautiful dulcet tones as I was a guest on her podcast not long ago. One thing I've just learned about Katie, which I think is really fascinating, is that she has synesthesia, which means that she sees certain colors when thinking about specific musical pitches or keys. And I had no idea about this until we were chatting just before we started.
I thought you'd like that.
This is really, really cool. And Katie, she never actually knew that it was a thing until she heard someone talk about it on a podcast a few years ago. So perhaps today someone else will realize they have this thing, and they'll know that they're not alone in the world. Welcome to the show, Katie Wardrobe.
Thank you. You're so lovely. What a great intro. I know, it was so funny. I'm listening to this podcast, and it was a co-hosted podcast actually about a cappella music, and one of the hosts on the podcast was telling the other one or describing it or something. And I thought, oh, that's so weird. I thought everybody did that and discovered it wasn't a thing with everybody. And so then I Googled and I found the Wikipedia article, and you know, it's about connecting certain senses with other senses. So for me, it's, you know, sight and colour, well, imagining colours and hearing. And for other people, it works differently. But yeah, that's my version of it. So one day I was telling another friend about this and the fact that I have synesthesia, which sounds like a disease, but it's not that bad. And my mum overheard my conversation. She said, "But you never told me that you had that." And I said, "But I didn't know. I just, you know, I had no idea either." So,
and I've always done that. You have colours for days of the week and numbers
totally
as well.
Do. I totally do.
You are so weird.
Apparently, I did not think so.
Apparently. So we're recording this on a Wednesday.
This is Wednesday, which is green, you know.
Wow.
And it's so bizarre. And another interesting thing, probably mention this later on anyway, but one of the online free tools, or I think there's a paid component that I like, is called Hook Theory. And Hook Theory is like an online place where you can record chord sequences and melodies and stuff. And they actually have colors for chords and for pitches on their website. And one of the guys on their team that was putting this together, they all decided that they would do this on purpose, is to assign colors, you know, with pitches and chords. And one of the guys on their team has the same sort of synesthesia that I do, where he associates colors and pitches and whatever. And he thought it was a great idea, but he had to bring himself to the fact that they weren't going to match his colors in his mind with what they ended up with on the website, because they, you know, they had to choose specific things. And so he's like, "No, it's wrong, but I'll just have to go with it."
Interestingly enough, I interviewed the Hook Theory guys just last month as part of our Pop Teaching Month, and he talked about that very thing. So there you go. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. And I read that somewhere in one of their blog articles.
Well, there you go. Well, look, before everyone signs out and stops listening because we're just talking about this, we are actually going to be talking some great content today, because I've known Katie for many years. We've been great friends and have always admired her work. She campaigns tirelessly for helping music teachers, and particularly classroom teachers, use technology effectively in their teaching, and not just for the fun of using tech, because that's really not the best way to approach it, in my opinion. It's about actually working out what the purpose of it is and then finding a tool that works really, really well. So, Katie, just tell us quickly a little bit about what you do day to day, if you have a regular-ish kind of day.
Yeah, not really. Both you and I doesn't know, it doesn't work that way. But yeah, mostly my time is taken up either running a workshop or presenting at a conference. So that happens. I've not done that as much this year, but in previous years it's been very, very frequent. So often flying off to interstate places or internationally, which is good. But other than that, I'm at home, working from home, and, you know, I love the fact that I have the flexibility to do that. It works really well with family life. But basically, I'm working in my community, either developing new materials for that or answering questions and, you know, just helping out people as best I can. And it gets really hard because so many people have questions that I really want to help and I really want to answer. So having a place where you can answer them all in one spot, like the community, has been a really, really helpful thing. And yeah, it's lots of fun. I just felt over time that, you know, really when I was starting out with technology, that there were so many great things you could do with it. And I could see lots of teachers just being really frustrated. And often if they asked questions of people around them, say the IT person at school or another colleague, that person was often quite short with them or impatient or didn't understand why they didn't know, or they didn't have ideas of application for education and, you know, music and that sort of thing. So that was what made me passionate about helping people out in the end, I think.
I totally love, I've been to a number of your workshops and they're always really engaging and it's action-packed. You're at your device and you're just trying something out new, which is great because so many conferences you sit and you look at great things, but you don't get that chance to try things. So I really love that your both your online training and your live training is very hands-on, which is what I tried to do with my videos as well. So look, I'm really interested to pick your brains about two areas of technology that I think can help us as piano teachers get more creative in our teaching. And that's composing in particular, and also rhythm work, because we all struggle from time to time with kids and rhythm. So I think you've got some very creative ideas on this because I've seen you in action. So okay, if we chat about composition first, perhaps.
Yeah, yeah. I love it. I love it. It's one of my favorite things to talk about. I used to be kind of scared of composition because I never did a composition major at university or anything. But over time, I've realized it's not about, you know, needing to write concertos. It's more about breaking it down into bite-sized steps or aspects. And that's worked really, really well. And I do love it now. So yeah, lots of fun.
Before we get on to some cool apps for this, I do remember your game. You had a very cool boom, snap, clap game. And I thought any kind of teacher of any instrument would love to know more about this. Could you give us a quick demo or run it through with us?
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah, I love this.
And what's it for too, by the way?
Yeah, well, this is actually one of those things where I turned it around. I actually found this. I have an obsession with hand clapping games. Like, I love them. I think they're fabulous for rhythm work, exactly why, you know, and the whole body percussion thing, but you want it to be a bit cool, you know. And I'd seen this boom, snap, clap game on YouTube. There's a couple of girls that do some instructional videos on hand clapping games and they're really great. They're young, they're two sisters, I think. And I saw theirs and I'm like, okay, that's kind of cool. And then more recently I saw this other video again of a couple of teenagers and they do a version of this, which is a little bit cooler and lots of variations. And so there's a simple pattern and it gets repeated over and over and it's just got three sounds in it. So there's the boom, which is with a tap on your chest, a slap on your chest, just to say.
Yep.
The snap, which is obviously a snap, and the clap, which is obviously a clap. And so there's this pattern which goes boom, snap, clap, ba-boom, snap, clap, snap, boom, snap, clap, ba-boom, snap, clap, snap. And that goes three times. And then the last one is boom, snap, boom, snap, boom, snap, boom, snap, boom, snap, and it starts again. And it's just a cool kind of like a basic rock beat and just really simple to do with body percussion. And I thought, oh, I really want to somehow incorporate this with technology. And only this year, I've known this for a couple of years now, but this year I just said, oh, I've got it. I've totally got it. And mainly because there's a great free online website called Groove Pizza, which is an online drum machine. And it has sort of two ways you can look at it. You can either see the rhythm in a circle. So there's a circle, which is one bar of music. The circle is divided into 16 slices, hence the pizza name. And underneath that, there's also a drum grid, which I use quite a lot with drum notation. So it's a way of representing drum notation. And because Groove Pizza has these three sounds, basically, a bass drum, a snare, and a hi-hat, you can recreate the boom, snap, clap pattern in Groove Pizza. So in my workshops I've been doing, we all get up and we learn the boom, snap, clap, clapping game. Hilarious watching groups of teachers learn to do that. There's always one in the group that just has massive trouble
with coordination. Yeah, that would be me.
Coordination, so funny.
So just going over it, before you go deep, so boom, snap, clap, ba-boom, snap, clap, snap. Is that right?
Correct. Yes. Yeah. You've got to have the extra step at the end. Yeah. Yeah. Good.
And so you can do this on your own and you can also do it with a partner, right?
Yeah. So what we do in the workshop is we learn it on our own and then you face a partner and the clap, instead of being just clapping your own hands, you clap towards your partner. So you clap your hands together. And then there's variations on it where you switch hands over first of all. So instead of right hand leading, you do left hand. And then you can do a two-handed version, which this is the bit that throws everybody. And then the video of the kids on YouTube, the two teenagers doing it, they have about seven or eight variations. So I think it's fabulous. It can be something that kids can easily make up their own version of and just do it rhythmically. And you can do it quite quickly, gets a bit more skilled that way. And then in the end, after we've done the performing aspect of it, we end up sort of analyzing it and working out what the notation would be. And you can do that, you know, as I said, with a drum grid Which we can talk more about, but also traditional notation, which is much harder for, you know, drum notation. It's quite difficult to do drum notation for a lot of people. And then basically transfer that rhythm to Groove Pizza, where you can record your own version of the pattern there.
So I've got a student who I've been learning in the last few weeks is really struggling more with rhythm than I thought. And so we've been doing a lot of different exercises and clapping simple rhythms and things, but I'm thinking maybe this is something I could do with him. He's kind of 12, I think, or 10 or whatever, because I think he'd really like it. And as a piano teacher, I could show him this and we could even do it together. Transfer it to a grid, help him understand how that notation works. And then I'm wondering, have you ever then gone another step to creating something musical out of it?
So the last stage for my process is basically after we've recorded the pattern in Groove Pizza, a couple of things that I've done is record the pattern as is in Groove Pizza, so the original one that we've just learnt. And Groove Pizza allows you to export a WAV file version of your pattern that you've recorded, which is awesome. As soon as you can export something from online software, I love it because you can do lots of stuff with it. But even in Groove Pizza, you could create variations on the pattern in there first and also export that, which would be great. But then we take the WAV file from Groove Pizza and put it into some sort of software where you can record voice over the top or a keyboard part or whatever instrument they play. I mean, you know, piano, obviously, in this instance, perhaps, but it could be any instrument over the top. So something like GarageBand, for instance, you could put it into there, add another track, and then record something over the top. So the thing I've suggested in workshops is to do a rap over the top, but it could be just a musical thing, you know, it could be melodic instead.
All right, so let's come back to that. Can you give us, you were going to give us the demo, I think.
Okay. So I'll say the word. I don't say the words. Eventually, it looks cooler if you don't say the words with it, but it's good in teaching to say the words with it. So it goes boom, snap, clap, ba boom, snap, clap, snap, boom, snap, clap, ba boom, snap, clap, snap, boom, snap, clap, ba boom, snap, clap, snap, boom, snap, boom, snap, boom, snap, boom, start again, snap, clap, ba boom. So the last bar, I kind of call it like the drum fill. The bit we've got drum, boom, snap, boom, snap, boom, snap, boom, snap. That's a good place to start. Kids, I think, making up their own little improvised one bar to go with the four bar pattern. So yeah, it's just four bars in total, and it's just lots of fun. It's really cool.
I really like it. And then, as you say, so you then get them to do a rap over the top. I think that's kind of, that would work one on one as a rhythmic exercise too. I think because the sound of words, the movement of words is a great way to learn rhythm. And so I often start vocalizing and then move to rhythm. So it's kind of going the other way, which is cool. Do you give them a topic or something to rap on?
Yeah, usually I think it works better if you do, because otherwise if you just go, just go and write a rap for eight bars, it's a bit too broad.
Yeah,
and kids
I agree.
Are like, you know, and then 7 hours later you got nothing. In the past I've got a couple of other projects I do where, you know, I've given really specific structure where it's kind of fill in the gaps type thing. But for this one, I didn't do that so much, but I got my son, my younger son, who's 10 and a half, to write something with me. And we ended up writing about the topic of not being able to fall asleep at night because there's a dog barking in the neighborhood, which is a real life thing at our house. And the dog makes all this noise and we don't know where the house, you know, which house it lives in. So we can't go and knock on the neighbor's door to tell it to stop barking. So he, you know, we wrote this rap about that and then I got him to say it. And so it's just really short. So I think you could give some sort of structure like, not sleeping at night or
annoying
your favorite
piano practice
or annoying piano practice, exactly what you don't like about homework or something like that.
And so then they literally press recording, so they import it into GarageBand,
which is literally just drag and drop into GarageBand and other software too, which is similar. It's so easy, nothing fancy, you just drag it in there and then add another track, which is your microphone track, your audio track, and press record. and they'll get, you know, they'll just start saying their rap over the top in time. So the biggest tip, which I always mention in workshops because lots of people forget this, is that I always ask teachers, what is the thing that you need to do before you press record, or what the kids need to do? And they all say things like practice. You know, get ready with your rap. Yes, get ready with your rap. So, but the main thing that I'm trying to get to is the kid needs to put headphones on, because if they don't have headphones on and they press record, they'll get the sound of the backing, the groove pizza backing that you've made, coming out of the speakers while they're saying their rap as well. And you don't get a clean recording. And if you make mistakes or want to move things around a little bit, you'll get two lots of the backing, basically, in the project. So,
very good tip.
Putting headphones on is a good thing.
Yeah, and turning off the metronome, I guess, because it won't be in time, will it?
No, well, hopefully it will. The metronome actually can be on if they've got the headphones on. So, yeah, but if they don't have headphones on, not so good.
Very cool. And look, for people listening, particularly Inner Circle members, I'm actually going to be creating a course all about how I use GarageBand in my piano teaching, literally over the shoulder, looking at me with what I do, showing you how to use the app. And I love it for all sorts of creative things in lessons. So you've just added another great element. So thank you for that.
Oh, yeah, no worries. Excellent.
So, have you got any other games with or without apps that are great for rhythm kind of work?
Yeah, I do a few things. So that the other rap project that I just mentioned before, I call Rap My Name. I like to have kind of cool names for all my projects, and I get annoyed when I can't think of a good one, but I have this Rap My Name project and also another one called What's in a Name, and they're slightly different, but they are kind of rhythmic as well. So the Rap My Name one, you can just create any kind of drum pattern. So it doesn't have to be based on the boom, snap, clap thing that we're talking about, but you could open up the GarageBand iPad app and create either a drum pattern from scratch if you want kids to get that practice, which is a really good thing, or they could create a smart drums pattern, which is sort of a ready-made one. And then again, they can create some sort of rap over the top of that and record it. And so that's also worked really well. It's a small enough project that you can do it quite quickly. I think getting people to record drum patterns from scratch is a really good thing, instead of heading to loop libraries or using ready-made drum patterns in the smart drums and things. You know, actually recording a part from scratch is a great exercise just on its own, and you can do it in whichever software you've got. It doesn't have to be the GarageBand iPad app, but you can basically add a real drum track, real in inverted commas, because it's
still electronic,
instrument. Yeah. And you don't have to, like I said, if you've got a basic rock pattern with bass drum, kick, snare drum and hi-hat, you don't have to record all three of those bits at once, all simultaneously. So you can basically record the kick drum part on its own, and then on a repeat run through of the two bars or whatever it is that you're recording, you can, on the second pass, record the snare drum. And then on the third pass, you could record the hi-hat. And I found that just that on its own is a fantastic exercise. Some teachers in my workshops have struggled with that. And it's good for them to practice, you know, and, you know, just to have a go at doing that. The biggest tip I've learnt with recording of drum patterns in workshops, and this actually goes for anything, piano parts, any software instrument, is to remind people that they can slow the tempo down. It doesn't matter. So recording at a really slow tempo is fine, because when you're finished and it sounds beautiful, you can then speed it up to whatever tempo you need to. So recording really slow is a good thing.
Great stuff. Awesome tips. So Rap My Name. What do they do?
Yeah, so that's the one where I've got a structure for that one. And I've actually got a free downloadable version of this on my website, so we'll put the link in the show notes.
Basically,
there's a structure. So the rap goes, my name is whatever, you fill in the gap. So my name is Katie and I like to something. So you fill in the gap there. My name is Katie and I like to sing. And then you do a couple of lines about that thing. And then the very last part goes, I like that two, three, four, I like that two. Oh, no, what is it? I like that two, three. Oh, yeah, I like that.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. So my son Josh wrote one which was, my name is Josh and I like to sing. It sounds croaky in the morning, but I am the king. I like that two, three. oh yeah, I like that.
Nice. It's simple, but it's giving a really simple scaffold framework to structure it, which is so important.
Yeah, I think so too. I think the structure thing is a really important part of it. It breeds success more easily, I think.
Yes, definitely. So it sounds like you're a bit of a fan of GarageBand. Would that be a fair comment?
Yeah, absolutely. But I do have alternatives because not everybody is a Mac user or an iPad user. So, you know,
so there's going to be people going, hooray, someone's talking about iPads. So what are your tips?
You're very iPad aren't you?
I am. And I can't help people so much with Androids, unfortunately. So give us some tips. Right.
So here's one really good one for any device, for everybody in the world. It's non-denominational. Is that the right word?
It's a little bit religious, but I get it.
Yeah, no, maybe not. Soundtrap is an online, it's basically an online version of GarageBand or a type of GarageBand. So it's online software. You log in to Soundtrap and you basically build up your recording there, your composition there. It's really good. It's not as fully featured as some other software, but I just love it. It's got a beautiful interface. And I recently spoke to one of the creators of Soundtrap and I was commenting on the beautiful interface. It's very light and white and colorful, so it appeals to my synesthesia side. And it works on iPads and Macs and PCs and Android devices because you just log in a browser. It's a web. And they actually have a connection with Google Classroom. So if any teachers are at schools that are using Google Classroom, it's got a connection there. So I'm not sure if studio teachers at school are accessing things like Google Classroom, but I'm sure some are. So yeah, it's just really good, and it's not expensive. Like, it's a subscription basis for students, but I really think it's worth paying that for and accessing it, and allows you to save your work. And you can easily do, this is one of the great things Soundtrap does, is collaborative composition. So I could start off by writing a rhythmic part, and then I can invite you to be part of my composition, and you could add a piano part, and then we could invite someone else to add their voice over the top of that. And it all works, because it's in the browser, it all works in the one central location online. So it works really well.
I could see that being a huge win for teachers running summer camps and group classes.
Absolutely. That'd be brilliant.
Really cool. Yeah. Yep. And I know more and more people are doing that, so that's a great tip.
Yeah, and because it works online, it's a bit like the way Noteflight works for notation online. You know, it's very central. A teacher's account is attached to all the student accounts, so if you need to gather work or assign work to students, you can do it through the software, and it's all in one place. You don't have to get kids to email you documents or put
great.
In Dropbox or something, which is the bane of everyone's life.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, very cool. Any other like standout non-iPad ones?
Yeah, so if you're on Mac, obviously GarageBand on the Mac desktop is really the best option there. Logic if you want something much more fully featured. And then on PCs, Mixcraft is an excellent choice for PC users, so I would do that. And on Android, I'm also not very au fait with Android device options either. And I have a feeling there is one good option, and I can't think of the name of it, but maybe we'll find it and put it in the show notes too.
Right.
Which is sort of a GarageBand type thing, but I tend to recommend, you know, the things that can work across a variety of devices are the easiest.
So you've mentioned drum grids a couple of times. Firstly, can you just give us an overview of what a drum grid is in case someone doesn't understand that? Why is that helpful, and how do you use it?
So the drum grid thing, it's funny, I've sort of used them for a long, long time. They've been just there, you know. It's a bit like the synesthesia thing again. They've just been there, but I haven't really realized that people don't use them or are not familiar with the way they work. So it's an alternative way of representing a drum pattern is by using a grid. And so generally speaking, you would have a grid. If you're in 4-4, you would have a grid of 16 squares going across. So obviously it's semi-quavers being represented there. And so if you were to place a dot in the first square on the left-hand side, that's going to be a sound on the first beat of the bar. And if you were then to place a dot in the fifth square, I'm visualizing this in my head.
Yeah.
The fifth square, that would be a sound on the second beat of the bar, and so on. And so you can subdivide the sounds up. So there's obviously there's limitations because a grid like that is only in 4-4 and you've only got the smallest value being would be semiquavers. So
it's not going to work for every 16th notes.
Yeah, yeah. I'll talk states to them. Yeah, and so, you know, obviously it's got limitations for what you can do, but rhythmically, if you're working, say, with that, it works really well. And the reason that I've used them over time is, A, to simplify notating drum patterns is one aspect, but actually the second aspect is that it ties in with a lot of software and app programs because they actually work like this anyway. So, and I sort of made that connection and went, oh, yeah, of course. I think that's why I'm familiar with them and maybe other people are not, because I've looked at a lot of drum grids in software programs or versions of drum grids in software programs. So that's why I've used them. So sometimes it can be easier, I think, to start with that grid and kids placing dots on, you know, in the correct square without having to worry about note tails and things like that, stems and tails at the same time. I think it's good to break it down sometimes and remove one element to make it easier, and then you can bring that in later on when they're comfortable with it.
It's a really visual way of laying out a rhythm. And I've used them before when trying to explain cross rhythms, threes against two, things like that. Or even clave rhythms for Latin American music, just to see where those things align. And if a student can get the groove, the 16th groove or whatever it is, they can align things better. So I do love it. And there's an app that I use. I can't remember its precise name, but I think it's My Rhythm, perhaps,
I was going to mention that one too.
A couple of pads, doesn't it, and a grid?
Yep, that's correct, yeah.
I don't. Can it do 16th? Divisions, or is it just the one that comes up, which is...
I haven't looked at it for a while. There's two that I've been using in the past, and I don't really personally use these. I tend to know them because I'm trying to recommend things to people. But that one I like. The interface of that one is very clean and clear and sort of modern looking, which is nice. There's another one I've used which is a little bit similar called, I think it's Reed Rhythm. That also has, you know, a couple of pads that you can play and that sort of thing. But I don't think the second one at least has any grid. Traditional notation across the top.
But it's just great to look at these options, I think, because all our kids learn different ways.
It's
good having them up your sleeve.
Yeah. The grid thing appears a lot in, you know, software, things like GarageBand and Mixcraft, where if you look at the MIDI roll view of your thing that you've recorded, that's the grid there. That's like the drum grid. And you can see just sort of squares, coloured squares placed where your sound is. And it's kind of related to that. So I think some kids prefer that and they think like that. I don't think I have to make myself, and a lot of the time when I look at a drum grid, I'm picturing traditional notation because that's what I learned, that's what I grew up with, and I am really happy with traditional notation and my brain works that way, but some people know, so I think, traditional notation can be overwhelming, especially when you first see it. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, look, let's move to more general kind of composition apps, tools, tips, ideas. What have you got that you've seen work really well that might work in the one-on-one or even if piano teachers are running group classes?
As long as you've got one of those sequencing options like GarageBand, you know, something where you can record chords or, you know, melodies and that sort of thing. There's a few that I use which are maybe not as fully featured as those things, which are great for introductory activities or taster activities. So there's the Chrome Music Lab. I don't know if you've looked at that, but it's a whole series. It's amazing. A whole series.
I wasted craziness. So much time. It's hours, so cute. Yeah.
It's so cool.
I shared it in my forums when I found it, and I thought, this is very, very funny.
And so when you go to that website, basically there's like a menu page of stacks of, I don't even know how many, 16 maybe different things that you can do. And so they have one called Melody, which is really cool, and it's like just one bar of music. And you can click on the screen to create different pitches. And I think that's a great way to sort of delve into composing just a small snippet of music, and kids can relate, you know, pitch with up and down, obviously, and things like that, and see that on the screen and write their own melody there. So you could get them to create something in that and then get them to play what they've created on the piano, or vice versa. I think it would be work really well either way. And then they're composing something, you know, a small level. But there's another one called...
just remind us, what was that called?
That one, I think it's just called Melody.
Oh, sorry, the what website did I go to?
Oh, within the Chrome Music Lab.
ChromeMusicLab.com, is that right?
Yeah. So I'm going to open it up while we're talking. yeah, Chrome Music Lab. And if you just Google it, it comes up. It's the first thing. And there's another resource in there, which is called, name escapes me, it might be just called Chords, but basically you go there and you can see a wheel shape with different chords, like the cycle of fifths, and you can click on each segment of the wheel and it will play the chord for you. And it's a really good place to use as like a sketch pad, I suppose, and just click on the different things, and you could try out different chord sequences just by clicking on those different areas. I've just opened it up, and it's called Arpeggios. It's not called Chords.
Oh, okay, because I remember you talking about it previously, and I looked for the circle of fifth thing, and there was nothing called that. So it's called Arpeggios.
It's called Arpeggios, yeah.
Okay.
And the reason for that is you can actually press a play button, and it will play whatever chord you've got selected. It will play it in an arpeggiated pattern. It's got a few different. But it will play it, and then you can click on the next chord and hear that one, and then the next one. So you can create like a little backing for yourself.
That's great, because
I
love teaching composition through chord progressions and relating chords to their position on the circle, because it all sounds good and it's how pop music's made mostly. So this sounds like a great way to, I guess, explore it without playing it on the piano, but then they could move it to the piano.
They could then play it. Yeah. I think so. Yeah, they could then do it. Yeah. And that could work well for kids that can't switch fluently between chords, I would imagine. So that's often a hard thing, is moving hand positions and stuff. So that would overcome that, just to hear it, and then they could practice afterwards. But hook theory that you mentioned, that we both mentioned before, again, I love that for exploring the relationship of chords to one another, because it has that great area called tabs, where you can explore the relationship of chords to one another and explore pop songs that are in existence that have certain chord sequences. So it's a great sort of research experimentation tool, but they have a separate section where you can actually record your own chord sequence and melody over the top. And I just love that. It's really super simple to lay down a whole backing and then compose your melody over the top, for instance. And I just like that taster way of getting into things and then, working from there.
And I think one of the real, what's the best way to say it? One of the things that has the biggest effect on my students with their composing, particularly if it's chord-based, is when I jump on my keyboard and play some strings along with them, or play a beat. And so I think one of the best uses of technology is that layering of sound, because it's very rare that we listen to an amazing piano solo in modern day times. Maybe Ludovico Einaudi, some film music, is an exception. But for the most part, it's thick and it's layered, the music kids listen to. So I think that's where I love something like GarageBand, or even just your humble sounds on your extra keyboard if you have one in the room.
I was just going to mention that. Yeah, I've got a Casio keyboard here, and my kids get on and start up all sorts of backings, and I'm in the kitchen, you know, cooking or something, like just rolling my eyes. And, they play along. They attempt to play along, except, of course, for some reason, the tempo has to be at about 180 beats. Like, maybe you should slow down a bit.
You did mention your two children are boys, right?
Yeah, totally boys. The other thing my eldest discovered was that I'm in the kitchen and listening to him. For some reason, of course, he became obsessed with Feralese, which, you know, anyway, of course, he had to teach himself to play that. So he did, and played it quite well. But I was in the kitchen one day and I could hear him playing it, and it's super speed, like, and perfect, like really, really accurate. And I'm like, what on earth? I said, is that you playing? And he goes, yeah. And I'm like, really? He had discovered how to record himself playing on the keyboard and then just push the tempo up a bit. So, I was hearing, it was him playing, but it was a recording.
Recording set up. Very nice. I wouldn't advocate that in the piano studio.
I wouldn't either.
But it is amazing how simple, even GarageBand, if you don't have a second digital piano of some sort, then GarageBand isn't just for recording. You can play it live. So if you have a couple of speakers, you can go to like a string sound, and if you put it on smart chords or whatever, is that what it's called? Smart instruments. It'll bring up the chords, and you just hold it down and it'll play an A minor chord.
Yeah.
And you can play that along with your student. Yeah.
I've actually used that in another project that I've done quite a bit of. I call it the Choose Your Own Adventure Remix. And basically, I get people to record using one of the smart instruments in GarageBand. I actually say to them, okay, you can choose from either strings, guitar, or piano. So the smart instruments in GarageBand. And so everyone in the room chooses their own thing. So there'll be lots of different choices around the room. And then I get them to all choose a sound within that instrument. So there's multiple keyboard sounds, for instance. So they just pick whichever one they want, just anything, guitar sound or string sound. And then the next thing everybody does is to pick one of three tempos. And so I give them a choice of three different tempos, a slow, medium, and a fast one. And they all choose different ones there. And then we choose, what's the next thing? Tempo, not key. We all do the same key. I feel like there's one other thing as well. But anyway, we all make our own choices. And then I get everybody to record the same chord sequence for 8 bars. So, and basically I have been using a known pop song in the past. So, and it's one of those songs which has a cyclical chord sequence that you can, you know, just goes on and on and on throughout the whole song. So I get everyone in the room to record it, and then I get them to try and guess the song that we've just recorded. And some people have like this heavy metal kind of guitar sound going. Other people have some, you know, cinematic strings version, which might be really slow. And then someone else will have, you know, some sort of funky Stevie Wonder style keyboard thing going at a different tempo. And that, they all sound so vastly different. And it takes people ages to work out the song. And I've been doing it for a while now. So it was a Taylor Swift song, which was Shake It Off. And it's, you know, just got 3 chords in it. And so funny, so difficult for people to guess the song. But we, after we've recorded that sequence, then they can go ahead and record a melody over the top of their choosing. So using the smart instruments in that way is fabulous. I can't play guitar, so it's great for me to instantly be able to have a guitar backing of some sort, which sounds really good. And then I can play, you know, something over the top on keyboard, which I'm much more comfortable with. And, yeah, it works really, really well like that.
It's exactly what I'm going to be showing people in when I put my course together for GarageBand. So do look out for, I'll be running a webinar on that and letting people know about how it all works. So it does have so many uses, GarageBand. And if you've got an iPad, it's free pretty much.
I know.
Certainly if you've got a new one. So it's a great tool to use.
It's amazing, amazing.
Now, I wanted to ask you, in starting to wrap things up a little bit, about technology, not just for pedagogy, not just for teaching, because I know you've got some pretty cool little nifty time-saving tips with using technology, and I know we can all do with saving some extra time. So you hang out with teachers a lot. You know where we waste a lot of time. What are your time-saving tips?
Yeah, and it's come from, you know, things that I've done wrong over the years. And I used to mention things in passing in workshops like, does anyone know this thing or this app or this option, you know, and people would be like, oh, tell us more about that. So actually this year I decided to run a whole session at the series of one-day conferences that you and I have both been at, a whole series on productivity tips for teachers using technology. So I put together my sort of top favorite things. I've got so many things that I want to talk about in that session. I never get through them all, but we get through a lot of them. But the top one that I start with and makes everybody very guilty and worried about the way they do things online is that I talk about using a password manager, because you can waste a lot of time trying to remember passwords or whatever. And the thing that a lot of people do to get around that is to use the same password everywhere, which is possibly the worst thing you can do for your online self. And you're making yourself very vulnerable to hacking and all sorts of things. And I can tell you lots of horror stories, but we won't go into that now. But yeah, that's the thing we start off with. And so I make everybody in the room admit whether they A, do they use a password manager? And most people don't, and that's okay. People don't know they exist. But I get them to admit whether they use pretty much the same password on every website, and they sheepishly put up their hands at least 90% of every workshop I've run, I think. So we talk about that. So basically, you know, there's software out there which will store your passwords for you and also generate passwords for you. And it can save passwords for you across all your devices, and you basically don't need to remember anything except this, the one single password to unlock that software, and then that's it. After that, you're great. And I can just say it is a time saver. A, if you do have different passwords, you don't need to remember all the different ones. But the second thing is, if something goes wrong and you are hacked, or, you know, worst case scenario, you are going to lose a lot of time at that point. So it is time saving in that way too. And it's a peace of mind thing, you know. So I definitely recommend looking into that.
Have you got a recommendation of which software to use?
Yeah, there's a few out there. The one I've been using is called LastPass, and that's an online piece of software. And it's really good because you can share passwords with other people without giving them the password, which is a great thing. So because I have a couple of assistants that I work with, passwords that I want to share with them live in a specific folder in LastPass. They have access to the folder. They can get into the website with the password, but they can't actually see the password itself. So it's a safe way to share passwords with other people. So it works really well with family members. And if you work with other teachers, that's also a good option too.
I also use LastPass. I've used it for many years. It's a huge time saver. And yeah, I like that it generates, you know, can generate a string of characters, 20 characters long, which no one is ever going
to
guess.
You don't need to worry. No,
and you never need to worry. You don't need to remember it. You just need to remember one password to get into it. And so if people are still not sure what this means, it means that as soon as you land on a page, you can tell LastPass to not only enter your username and password, but also press go.
Press the button.
So
yeah,
literally, if you favorite a website and you go there, you land on it, it'll log you in and you'll land on the first page that you need. It's just remarkable.
It's
that
brilliant.
More people don't use it. So LastPass is what I use and what Katie uses. It's so good.
And it's a bank-breaking $14 a year or something like that. You know, like for a whole year, it's $14, I think, something like that.
And it probably has a free trial too. So
absolutely. And it's just really worth doing it. And even now, I think they've lately had a development where someone in my workshop, while I was talking about LastPass, she downloaded the app on her iPhone and set it up, and it somehow drew in all of her passwords from, I think, from her email account. You know how you get sent confirmation information and stuff? Drew it all in and set it all up for her, like a big portion of her her websites and stuff. So, yeah, that was a quick setup for her. But it's every time you go to a website and you enter a password, if it hasn't already got it stored, it will say, hey, do you want me to save that for you? And you go, why, yes, I do. And you click the button. I love it.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's really, really good.
That's great.
Okay, so that's your big tip number one. Have you got a couple of other ones to finish us off with today?
I think really for me, using online documents like Google Documents, you know, has been a massive change over the past few years, you know. So since I worked at Sibelius a few years ago, and that was when we started using Google Docs for online meetings, you know, where we're all logged into Skype and we all open up the same document in Google, and we can all type minutes simultaneously into the one document. And that's been really useful. I think the days of, if anybody out there is still emailing attachments of like a Word document to someone else, and then they make changes and they send it back to you on email, like, just stop now, because really.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, my gosh.
Please
stop.
It's just such a waste of time.
It's
and
such
so
a waste
confusing
of time.
Too, because you've got to keep saving them and remember which
and
versions.
Who's got the
which
latest version? I know. Oh, imagine, you know, you're organising a concert with two other people. You know, it's just ridiculous. So having a central place with documents. And my biggest tip with Google Docs particularly is, you don't have to share individual documents with people. You can actually share a folder of documents. So if you are, say working on a concert, end of your concert with two other teachers, you could all be part of a shared folder, and anything any of you add into that folder will be be automatically shared with the other people in that folder. So that's been a great thing that I've done with my team members. You know, rather than the fiddly thing with Google Docs is remembering to make it permissible that other people see the document. So once you've put it into this folder, it's all good.
That's right. Yeah. And I've actually recorded a webinar on this, which anyone can grab, have a look at the replay of. It's just at timtopham.com/events and have a look for the free webinar on productivity. I did it with a superstar music school owner called Joyce Ong in Sydney, and she goes through exactly how to set up Google Docs on the screen in front of you. Cool. So if you're unsure about it, I 100% concur with Katie. It's such a great time saver.
I've recently learned a little trick actually with Google Docs, which I might just share for anyone that doesn't know. And this is to do with me wanting to set up, say, a Google Form, which is like a student worksheet type thing, which I want to share with teachers, but I don't want them to alter my original form. I want them to keep a copy of the form and then use it for their own purposes, and then they can alter it after they've made a copy. And so if you give people view-only access to your Google document, that's one thing, and they can only view it, and they can then go to file menu and make a copy. So that's one way of doing it. But it's kind of hard to remember to tell people to do that, or they don't quite understand that they need to do that. So I've found recently that you can change the URL, the web address of that document. And if you put the word copy at the end instead of the word edit that's there already, it will force people to make a copy when they log into that document. It actually comes up not with the document, it comes up with a pre-screen, like another screen saying, would you like to make a copy of this document? And you just go, yes, I do. And then it will add it to your own Google account. So that's just been a great discovery in the last few weeks for me, because now I can easily share stuff that I set up, and it will force teachers who log into that to make a copy without them getting a bit confused about what they need to do. So
that is very cool. Yeah. I didn't know about that one. Thank you, Katie.
Fun.
All right. Well, in finishing up, was there any other tools, tricks, tips on any of the topics that we've talked about today that you're itching to say that we haven't covered yet?
I think that's about it, really. I think just having fun and doing bite-sized bits of composition or creative stuff with music, that's my approach. And yeah, making it fun. There's so many cool things you can do. And, you know, I love the fact that technology's changed what we can do these days, you know, give you access to all sorts of things. We didn't talk about live looping, for instance, but, you know, you and I both love Loopy HD, the app where you can be your own one-man band, and I've loved that. So things like that, which technology has allowed me to do over the years, I think is a great thing, and what kids love too.
Absolutely, yeah. Not only is it engaging, there's plenty of pedagogical benefit that can come from using these apps as long as you use it with a goal in mind. I think that's what I would sort of say.
Start with the reason. Yeah.
Yes.
A lot of people come to me and say, well, I've got GarageBand, what do I do with it? And I'm like, well, what do you want it to do? So, yeah, start with the goal in mind. You're right. Absolutely.
Yeah. Have you got an issue with rhythm? Then here are some apps you can use. If you've got an issue with note reading, then try this.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to mention one. I did want to mention one more app. I don't know if you've used Clapping Music.
No.
This is great. So I won't say much about it because we're winding up, but it's based on Steve Reich's Clapping Music piece. And basically you can download the app and perform the rhythm. And it's basically the same rhythm which kind of shifts each cycle. Very difficult to explain, but just go and download it and have a go. Slow down the tempo in the settings when you stuff it up the first few times and then get into it. And it judges you on preciseness of playing, as, you know, not just accuracy of the rhythm, but actually how precise you were in performing the rhythm too. So lots and lots of fun.
That's the one that phases slightly out of time, isn't it? Continuously.
Yes, is that right? Correct. Yeah. The rhythm displaces itself by one pulse or one beat. It moves. It's very hard to explain. It does head in for a little bit, and it actually uses kind of like a drum grid notation thing, like just dots.
Cool. All right, we'll check it out. So Clapping Music, and Clapping it's an music. App for
it's an app for Apple. iPad. Yeah,
iPad. Sorry. Oh, look, you know. look, absolute pleasure talking with you again, Katie. I'll actually put a link to my page all about iPad apps for piano teachers. If you haven't seen that, then it'll be on the show notes. And a reminder that today's show notes are at timtopham.com/episode95. If you would like to find out more about Katie and the amazing things she's doing, you can head to Midnight Music. MIDNIGHT, midnightmusic.com.au. Katie, it's been a pleasure. I look forward to seeing you really soon.
Great talking to you. Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude this evening's entertainment.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. We'd love to help take your teaching to the next level as a member of our supportive community. Use the coupon PIANOPODCAST for $100 off an annual membership of Tim's Inner Circle today. To find out more, head to timtopham.com/community.